You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Elizabeth Gregory Gruen. She's in New York at the moment. Elizabeth, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So let's talk about what you're working on. You're in New York. You have a studio in the city, and maybe if possible you can tell me where your studio is and what you're working on now.
Presently, I'm continuing my series of cut work, which is a freehand cut paper technique with no guides, no computers, no nothing, just me and a surgeon scalpel pulling lines that capture shadow and light and create a vibration and a movement. Most of the time, I do the work up in the Catskills, which is quite beautiful upstate New York. So it's a kind of a serene place to think.
But well, maybe most of the recent ones look a little that to me. The ones that I've been looking at are the white cut paper pieces, and they do almost look. I mean, I'm glad you said that they're all done by hand, you know, with a scalpel, because they have such a precision to them and such a geometry to them. They almost look as though they're computer aided or something like that.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of people at first view them, and they want to know if it's a die cut or if it's some kind of computer program. It's not. This is a technique I took up almost in rebellion to all of that. I started doing drawings like this way back in my teens, and then I segued into the fashion business about 25 years, designing clothes, really looking at the prospects of three-dimensional design. And then I fell upon this again in my about 8 years ago, a little bit more than that. And I've been developing it. And the fact was, everything was becoming so computerized, it was good to go back to a place where those little imperfections can be the perfection. I find so much of the computerized works is it's almost too perfect and strives too hard to be imperfect. Why not just go back to the essence of who we are and the humanity of who we are and just put pencil to paper, in this case, a scalpel knife to paper, and just go. Just works straight from the hand.
In some ways, it seems to me, I mean, we talk about like computers as perfection, but in a way, there's a symmetry and a beauty to yours, which also seems, you know, quite perfect. I mean, in the sense that it's incredibly well balanced and does feel like a sense of perfection, a sense of completeness. There doesn't seem to be like errors in there, mistakes, accidental chunks taken out. What I am trying to struggle to liken it to is kind of like that Zen Sumi circle, you know, which is can be such a beautiful, perfect form. But of course, that's something that a computer can't reproduce, really.
No, that is true. Something that's very, very special and unique to it, and that's part of what this is about. I mean, I go into it with no plan, with no expectations, only discovery. I don't start with the drawing; I go straight knife to paper. It's just a great deal of, I'd say, concentration, almost a meditation in a sense, without making a plan.
So let's talk about that process a little bit. Is that many layers of paper that you stack up and are cutting through?
Yes, I start with the top layer. And I take the scalpel straight to that. The only time in some of the circular images, I will use a light compass outline. However, everything inside is freehand cut. That meaning no pencil lines, no guides, no anything of this nature. It's just knife to paper. And you cut. And then you add an adhesive underneath that layer. And then you add another piece of paper. And you cut again. And then you add another adhesive, and then you add another piece of layer. So it's a reverse relief. Now, simultaneously, every piece that comes from this first cutting is recreated as a relief. So once you complete a work, the cycle is completely done. So you know when you're done. So there's no danger.
It's very interesting. It's almost like printmaking in a sense, a kind of... I used to do more printmaking, haven't done recently, but the kind of subtractive process of I don't know if you've done printmaking, but it feels like that a little bit to me, because there's also this element of surprise, I would think, for you, because you don't know exactly what it's going to look like until it's done.
Yes, there's no expectations, only discovery. And sometimes it's not really till three quarters of the way through the piece I have any idea if it's going to be successful or not. Ironically enough, I have very few throwaway pieces because I go into it, I'm ready. You know, I'm ready. I'm just going to cut this thing. And you throw everything out of your mind, you know, and you just have to do this one thing. And that concentration, I think people can feel that when they view and they take their place with it. So there's no rules or parameters which to follow to view it. It's a place for your mind to rest, to reach your own sense of meditation. And it always changes because the way the shadow and light hits it, it's never the same. And there might be an imperfection or two, but that imperfection can be the beauty of it, you know. And that's really where, as humans, our imperfections sometimes are our most beautiful parts. So it's very much that, and it keeps that vibration of light. And it's always changing, just like the human experiences. In the case of the shotgun pieces, where I deconstructed them by shooting with a 12-gauge shotgun, I got to see what the most extreme effect of a cataclysm on this serene kind of piece, you know, this thing that's just capturing shadow and light with the spaces to emanate that, and then to see it just destroyed. But in that, you find a different serenity in the fact that there's another whole set of shadows. And if you don't know it was a shotgun, you're doing this. It has one emotion, but once you find out that this was the tool, it changes the emotion. So the work itself is really just an examination of how you respond to it, whether it be a sense of meditation or a place to rest or a place of contemplation.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that. I just wanted to talk about this shotgun work next, because the work itself does seem, you know, serene in one way, and even you describing the process as meditative and working up state, and then the shooting video, which I saw of you kind of working on those, I guess we do relate shooting to violence, but even that aside, it seems to be kind of the opposite approach, as opposed to the careful scalpel's knife. This is largely random. I mean, you're I assume you're not like a marksman, and even if you were, you know, it's like the shot flies out, so you get one puncture, but then all these other little holes, and it just seems like the opposite approach to what I would imagine is your temperament, which from the way you're talking and working seems so calm and calculated.
Well, the calculation is minimal. The cutting itself is spontaneous. I don't really go into it with a plan. When I said no plan, I do mean it. I'm not very good at rules. So as a result, I just sort of let it happen. And it's the same thing with aiming the shotgun. Just let it happen. I find if you try to create an expectation, you will only, more often than not, feel defeated, because you'll never meet that expectation. Because there's no way to define, you know, there's no way to make a concrete definition of that. You're always striving for something you're never going to. This way, you come upon it, you discover it. And sometimes that can satisfy more than any preconceived expectation.
So how did you come upon and discover a shotgun? I mean, it seems from what you were doing that wouldn't be a natural progression. What brought the shotgun into the picture? And I would think there's something to learning how to shoot the gun, hold it. I've never shot a gun like that. I would imagine it's kind of hard to shoot. You know, what brought you into the fold of the shotgun?
Well, after doing the first series, which was all white on white, and just working purely with the shadow and just that sort of movement with the way daylight hits it, I was, you know, standing in the room in January, and it was just so quiet. You can almost hear a murmur, you know. I was like, well, what's the most extreme thing to this? How far can I take this in the other direction? And I thought for a while. I said, what's the most harmful thing, what's the most intense thing that humanity's created, an outside force, and it would be a gun, you know. So with that in mind, I said, let's see what happens.
If you don't mind me asking, so then how did you learn to shoot a gun and all of that, and what
well,
that
I,
difficult?
Yeah, I had a friend. I have a friend, actually, who had a couple of hunting rifles on hand. And I said, you know, listen, I've got some pieces. Let's go see what we can do with this thing. And so we went up to a very, you know, empty place, it's an old airfield, and we decided to see what we could do with it. And I was very surprised at what the result was, because I shot a lot of them in the back. And there's an additional surprise when you turn them around and you see this sort of a blossom or this destruction, however you want to view it, in the front. And once they were put in a place where you can get the light on it, it really came to life. But again, it's depending upon if you know what the tools are. If you don't know that that tool was used, it's a very different emotional experience than if you do know that that tool has been used.
Absolutely. And was it difficult to begin using that tool? I mean, isn't there a lot of, I really don't know anything about those kind of guns, but I thought there's kickback, it hurt your shoulder, it's, you know.
Yeah, I had never myself done any of that, so it was quite an emotional experience on a lot of levels. Also, you know, shooting your own work, you know, it can be. I mean, I know artists have done it in the past, yes, there's a different emotional kind of aspect to it, which you can't be ready for. You want to feel sort of like you've done something wrong, but then you're so happy with how it's come out. You're like, well, you know, there's middle ground.
Right. Let's talk about that a little bit, because that's such a kind of interesting and sort of odd place, because especially these works aren't, you know, sort of gestural paintings or something that's done quicker. These take so much time that it does seem almost like a destructive act to your work, even though that's not your intention. So, I mean, how did you feel doing that initially, and what were you, if this isn't too difficult to kind of articulate, what were you grappling with? Because I would think it's almost like throwing your work in the fire or something. It may not come out the way you wanted, and you put so many hours into the piece that you're about to.
Yeah, I mean, there is that completely, because you do spend time, as you've pointed out, but at the same token, you almost want to take it to the most extreme place. And so it's more of a reckoning with that. You kind of, on it, there's no real calculation, because you're just like, all right, how far are we going to take this? And I like the sense of surprise. I like the sense of no expectations. I like that adventure. The work always is an adventure. Every time I put knife to paper, in this case, when I use these particular tools, when I put this in there, it's an adventure for me. So it's almost fulfilling that. It's the adventure of human emotion. We do it every day. You know, we self-destruct on ourselves and on other people. We don't know it. We don't know what the outcome will be. But in this case, it's like this is what happens. You can take something that's seemingly very calculated and everything's fine, swimming along, and then all of a sudden just blow it up. There's a sense of I don't know, a satisfaction in a way, but in the other way, it's a sense of fear. But it does tap into a whole range, and I like to have the adventure of that, to feel those emotions. And perhaps if somebody's viewing it, they'll feel those emotions as well and help them reckon with something, or perhaps explore new ideas, hopefully in a positive way.
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting whether or not, as you say, whether or not you reveal what's happening or not. As you say, when you look at the piece, and typically, I like to think, you know, we look at art independent of the artist, and we're either attracted to it or not, or explore it in different ways. But in the case of these particular works with this shotgun, it really changes the viewer's perception whether you tell them how it was made or not. So how do you make the decision about whether or not to tell the viewer, or what? Well, or maybe you can tell me what the dialogue is there when the viewer sees it, or is that a choice you make?
Well, it's an interesting point, because when you do, you put something, say, on a wall in a gallery or in somebody's home, you know, you don't necessarily put the placard next to it saying, oh, this is a gunshot piece. There was a decision in that. Do you reveal it, or do you let them discover it? I sort of settled on revealing it, but in a small font. Let them discover it. Take a look at the piece, and then look at what it's made out of. Do you know, I didn't want to make it just an upfront story. I wanted them to discover it and reckon with it on their own, rather than saying, this is what this is, and this is what you should feel from it. No, this is a sense of discovery. As I said, no expectations, you know, only discovery. And that's what I want to put out there, because I feel there's so many rules in art, is if you put something up on the wall and you have to have a story for it, you have to have a backstory. This is a place where you come in and you find the backstory for it. I can tell you the tools if you like to know, but I want you to discover it and make sense of it as you will. And think about it, because I think so much today everyone's so completely inundated with information. Sometimes it's a nice place to go and just rest and then find something along the way that might resonate with you down the road, or even just at that moment. But, you know, this kind of thing, sort of a sense of discovery, not just like, you know, being blasted by so much information 24/7.
Right, and we are blasted with so much information. You know, the idea of the way you say it was, you know, it's in small print, And that kind of discovery is fascinating because it really leads the viewer, I think, or potentially leads the viewer on this kind of, journey of looking at how they're perceiving. I mean, the parallel example to me that comes to mind, and you can stop me if this is really off, but is Andre Serrano's Piss Christ. When you look at that image, to me it looks like a gorgeous believer's image, something that could be on an altar in a church. When you read that it's a crucifix in the artist's urine in small type, your meaning of it, your feeling about it, or can changes completely. And
yeah, it changed a lot when people read what it was about. Yeah,
yeah, it sure did.
Definitely. But you're right. It is a parallel effect to that. It's something that upon the viewer's discovery, they make their own reckoning point, and either they're okay with it or else they take it to task, as they did in Serrano's piece. You know.
But the work you're doing now no longer does that. You're not shooting work anymore?
No, I'm still shooting things. But I'm starting on a new series where I'm going to be in collaboration with a master silk screener to create spontaneous gradations in color as the base, the backdrop for the cut works. So we'll do all the papers and different kind of gradations of color with his, because he does everything by eye and freehand. And we'll create a whole range of colors, and then I will cut a layered piece inside of there, and we'll see how that comes out. So the color range will be everything from very soft, or maybe do something very, very red or very bloody. I don't know. At this point, we're still defining the color scheme. We're in very early days, but everything's set to go, and perhaps some of these might, get shot. We just don't know yet. But that's the next thing. But it's two pieces of spontaneity coming together. They're both required, the sense to discover. So I'm very excited
that sounds really exciting. I mean, and a big leap from this work, but it's also bringing in one other element, because there's a collaborator, and he's a master printer, and master printers probably aren't used to their work being shot. The way I think of master printers is that these perfectionists, one bit of dust and the print's gone, but you're also, and I don't know what his or her emotions will be as, or reaction as you shoot these. I presume, the printer knows that, but you know what I mean? This is now a triangle. It's your art and you and this other person, and the whole collaboration is being altered in a way that will affect how they're perceiving it too, how your collaborator is perceiving it too, which is an unknown element, I would think.
Yes, it is to a certain extent, but they are. We've been racking our brains for a couple of years on how to come together on something that could be satisfying, And this seems to be the best jumping off point, and I think they're game. they do have great respect for the spontaneous aspect of the work, just the cutting itself, just the fact there is no plan, which is so much what I feel happens when they're doing their gradations of color. You might do 20 sheets of paper, but each one's going to be slightly different. There's no way to make it completely constant because it is a handmade thing.
Right.
So we do share that in our very basic approach to making something, tangible.
Well, yeah, again, it also sounds like the language of printmaking to me. And, of course, it is there because you're working with this printmaker, but the language of surprise, and printmakers, especially master printmakers, like to push the medium and what else can be done, how can we stretch this. And so that sounds kind of like a perfect relationship for what you're doing, and a very exciting series. Will that be... Well, I guess you can't say whether that will be exhibited, but do you plan on exhibits for that, or are there any upcoming exhibits of your work?
There's nothing at this time because I want to get this body of work done. I have some shotgun pieces laying in wait that are waiting for a wall. I'm also back to exploring working in metal, where in this case you take the piece that's been cut, but the pieces are not, the layers are not attached. And then they get scanned into the computer, and then they laser cut. And I'm starting to work on some three-dimensional pieces where we create cubes and other geometric shapes in space with this imagery all around each side to create many more dimensions in shadow. So the whole three-dimensional shape will have shadow and movement, versus just the pieces that are on the wall, which have only just one side.
That sounds very exciting. And where, how does the work then get out into the culture, into the world? Is it through galleries or
I do. I'm what you would call, I guess, an emerging artist. I started showing in 2008, and I show once and twice a year, and sometimes in group shows. But I usually try to do one show a year because I need to keep the conversation, the dialogue going, and with everybody. You know, anybody who brings their eyes, I want to keep growing those eyes and keep that conversation morphing. So it's really about finding the best set of walls, and we see where it goes. I do have one gallery I work with pretty often, but I'm still at a place where I'm sort of an outlier. I didn't come from, I didn't go to school to study art. I'm a third generation fine artist. Both my mother and grandmother are oil painters. I had to rebel and go and cut paper and do that. And I also spent 25 years working as a fashion designer. And so after leaving this business, I really was consumed by doing my artworks and was lucky enough to be able to do it full-time. So I started showing before I left the business, like I said, in 2008. I've only left the business about 3 years ago. So it's an ongoing challenge to find the wall space, to find the support for something that sort of defies category. Because as you pointed out, it seems like it's printmaking, but or in that family, but it's not. It's not really sculpture. It's not really an oil painting, clearly. You know, so it is a place that's still defining where it belongs and the understanding by, you know, the world outside.
And before the last question, I just wanted to ask, so that is a challenging position you're in and an exciting one, as you say, as a quote-unquote emerging artist. In New York City, to be looking for walls is not an easy task. It's one of the most competitive cities to do that. How do you go about that? Is that through open calls? Are you going to a lot of shows? How do you find these walls?
I go to a lot of shows. I talk to a lot of people, and you'd be surprised. When people see the work, they tend to be very open to it. So through a bit of luck and through a lot of hard work, you start small and you keep showing. Just keep showing. It's, you know, it's a lot like being a musician. You've got to keep go out and playing, you know, and this is the same thing with artwork.
Right.
You know, it is a challenge, you know, unless you come in with equipped with proper degrees or a certain kind of network. But to come from the outside without that is you know, it almost makes it more fun when you do get a special break.
But you are getting a break, and you're not putting your lack of degrees or degree in the world is holding you back.
Sorry?
You're not finding, but it is possible to get it out there. You're not finding you're saying you're self-taught and everything.
Yeah, no, I still get it out there. I mean, you know, you have to be tenacious. But, I always find that to be, it's how shall I say, you know, when you look at somebody's body of work as who's just starting, and you're looking back saying, well, all that fashion design was wonderful. Everybody's wearing my clothes, but, you know, I don't have the CV for this kind of event. You have to kind of look beyond that and let the work speak for itself. And fortunately, I've been lucky in many occasions to have that. But, yes, there seems to be, also because of the fact I'm in New York City during the week, you're up close and personal with it. So, yeah, it's just another challenge.
And lastly, I just wanted to ask you, it's a question I've been asking people lately, is what book or books are you reading now, if you don't mind sharing that?
Well, there's a couple. I tend to do a few at a time. But the one that I'm reading now that I've been going back and forth to is there's an afternoon interview by Calvin Thomas with Marcel Duchamp from back in the 60s. It's more of a conversation. I've been enjoying that a great deal. And you know, I've been reading some William Burroughs, Call Me Burroughs, which is from Barry Miles. So I kind of cover the spectrum, but these two I've been picking at recently.
Elizabeth, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure to discuss your work.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.